issues. I'm your host, Hugo Follett. On the show this morning, I'll be talking to Claire Gaudiani, president of Connecticut College, and our topic will be philanthropy. President Gaudiani, glad to have you on the show.
Thank you, Hugh. It's wonderful to be with you.
Okay, we're going to talk about philanthropy. So maybe we ought to begin by asking, what exactly do you mean by philanthropy?
Well, of course, philanthropy comes from two Greek roots, and it means a lover of man. So at the very basic definitional level, philanthropy defines a way of living in the world that involves being optimistic and loving your fellow human beings.
Okay, so defined, someone does not have to be wealthy to be philanthropic.
No, in fact, all of us make a society stronger insofar as we're able to reach out to other people with a spirit of love and generosity. And, of course, some kinds of philanthropy involve giving money, showing that you love your fellow man by giving money. Other times it's giving things away that you can manage without, that someone else can need and put to good use. And of course, many times we show that we love our fellow human beings by giving our time and our expertise to help other people improve the conditions of their lives, or in fact to improve the environment as well.
Okay, do you distinguish philanthropy from charity? It's another term that sometimes gets used, but it sounds to me like your meaning of philanthropy is not quite the same as what the ordinary person means by charity.
Well, charity, particularly in our country and in the Judeo-Christian tradition, often makes us think about giving some money to a cause, and it's a beautiful thing to do, and it's lovely. And of course, we have all of the scriptural texts around charity, and they're very much a part of our tradition. Philanthropy is a term that is, in a sense, encompasses all kinds of giving and all kinds of presence to other people. Sometimes a form of philanthropy is a word, a generous and supportive word to another person, because you can see that they're suffering, there's a lack in their life at that moment. So if a lot of folks think about charity as making out a check for $25 to something, that certainly is a part of philanthropy. But we need to think about charity and philanthropy, I think, in a much bigger universe. See all the things that we can share and not only show that we love our fellow human beings, but it sort of encourage in them the same kind of response to others. In other words, when you've shown a good example and shown someone what philanthropy looks like, they often will copy you and do something loving to someone else.
If you could sort of summarize what you see as the basic reasons for and or motivations for philanthropy, and then I think we'll be amplifying those through a lot of the remainder of the show. Just kind of give a snapshot of what you'd want to say, and then we can look at it in more detail.
Right. Well, philanthropy is such an important part of the life of each person because it lays down the relationships that we have to each other. Philanthropy defines what you can expect from me as a person if you get in trouble. And if I've shown you a good example, of course, it shows me what I might expect back from you if I ever have a need. It also gives me a chance to develop my best self. And finally, philanthropic activities give you and me as fellow citizens an opportunity to look at the rest of our community, our neighborhood, our town, our state, or something, our nation, something we care about, and decide together that with other people, we're going to be generous with our money and our time and our expertise to make something new happen. And particularly in a democracy, where the government is of the people, for the people, and by the people, the work of citizens together has the transforming force, creating the future. So philanthropy is a perhaps the most basic attribute of life in a democracy, along with a rule of law. Philanthropy is that critical. It really speaks to the individual gift of each citizen coming forward to change the future.
All right, I want to look at some of those elements in more detail. I mean, one of the things you said I thought was very interesting, that giving helps develop the best self. Could you explain what you mean by that and how it is that philanthropy does help us develop the best self we could be?
Well, let me start with some examples. When our children were small, we would, and in preparation for holidays that we celebrated, like Christmas, we would sit down with the children, and we would help them to identify some money that they had in their piggy banks and some money that we would give them to match that. And we would go shopping with them for presents for poor children who were in our neighborhood in inner city Philadelphia. And those times that we spent with our children, focusing on the needs of others, helping them to make a sacrifice of their own little funds, their allowance funds, and then matching that so it became a larger amount, helped them to think about other people and to think about generosity and to become people who today have a really wonderful mindfulness of the needs of others. We could have simply made out a check and sent it, and of course we did that on our own, to the parish and helped the poor families in our community. But getting the children involved helped them to become people who understood generosity and then who took great satisfaction from knowing on Christmas morning that someone was opening the box of mittens that they had picked out, and someone else was opening the toy truck, and someone else was opening the pencil box. And their sense of being valuable in the world, of being good people, of being able to make a difference, of participating generously in someone else's life, all of those features that my children were able to experience about themselves, I believe, contributed to their happiness as adults and their generosity as adults. So that's one way in which philanthropy practiced carefully at home has a transforming effect on the individual. Now, you know, I'm a professor and a college president, so I have 1,650 outstanding young people at Connecticut College, men and women who come from all over the country and all over the world, and about 80% of them are involved in community service, which is another kind of philanthropy. And those young people, as they're focusing on their own careers and their own extracurricular sports and club activities, also each week make a contribution to the lives of children who need to improve their reading and women in the Niantic Women's Prison and all the other volunteer activities that young people participate in. And they become more generous, more understanding, more interested in the needs of others. And right along with their education comes some character building that would be hard to make happen outside of this framework of personal philanthropy.
All right, let me ask. There are two different things you said there, and I'm wondering if how exactly they fit together. On the one hand, you were emphasizing that what you want to encourage, what you want to do, is you want to get your children, in the case of your children, you'd like to encourage your students to focus on the needs of others, where the focus becomes outside of themselves.
Right.
That someone else has a need, someone else is hurting, and there's something that you can do to help.
Right.
At the same time, you also talked about your children getting the great satisfaction that, from helping someone else. That you were talking about, and maybe to some degree even emphasizing the ways in which the giver benefits. This even ties into something you said earlier, talk about the benefits to both the giver and the receiver.
Right.
Are those, do you have to have both elements in order to be genuinely philanthropic? I guess what I'm wondering is I can think of people, and I'm sure I've done it myself at times, where I've been helpful to someone else because it made me look good. I've been helpful to someone else because it made me feel good. Is that genuinely being philanthropic?
Of course, there's nothing wrong with feeling good and feeling your own ability to improve the world, even in this tiny little place, like Christmas morning in a given household where someone opens a box of mittens. There's nothing wrong with that. If the only reason someone is doing philanthropy is so that other people will see and think the world of him, then that's creating a flaw in a character, because that's personal performance. It's using philanthropy to get attention. And in fact, some of the great wisdom writers like Maimonides advocated giving as anonymously as possible, and as generously as possible, and as often as possible, and with as much joy in your heart as you give, as you can manage. And he called that the seventh of the eight stages of tzedakah, which is this concept of generosity that is really even much more than generosity, that is taught in the Jewish tradition. So there's something very important that you bring up, Hugh, in focusing on the importance of not making a personal performance out of one's philanthropy. On the other hand, particularly for young children, it's fine for them to see themselves as being people who can alleviate pain. Children are often struck by the pain in the world that they see. Our children were in inner city Philadelphia and were seeing poor people on the streets, and we had to develop a way of enabling them to feel that in some small way they could make it better for people, without getting themselves in some kind of difficulty. When we think about how the self is improved in philanthropy, we really need to think about it in different stages. Young children, we used to encourage our young children to tell their grandparents what they had done in philanthropy for Christmas, so that their grandparents would approve them and admire them, and that would encourage them. By the time we see students at Connecticut College, we begin to talk to them much more about doing things that others don't know about, and that you do because they're the right thing and not because you're into performance. And of course, later on in adulthood, this issue of anonymous giving is complicated. Some major givers want to remain anonymous, and the organization they're giving to says, please don't remain anonymous. The fact that you have made this gift is going to inspire others. And we know that you'd like to remain anonymous, but you would actually multiply your gift if you would permit us to announce it. And under those kinds of circumstances, givers will often say, well, if it will help the cause that I care about, that I've given to, then of course you may announce my name. But the person doesn't go at the giving with the notion that, oh, wow, I'm going to get a lot of attention and everyone's going to think I'm terrific and that'll certainly improve my social standing. That takes away the positive transforming effect on the giver, because it really is just an act of egotism.
Okay, so let me just see if I've got this right. When you talk about the way in which a person feels good about what they've done. It's not that it becomes a matter of self-importance, look how wonderful I am. It's that a person understands their ability to make a difference in the world.
Right.
Okay.
And in our society in particular, each citizen has a special responsibility to be a person who enables our society to improve. Our founding fathers wrote down in those documents, the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence and the Bill of Rights, some pretty high ideals. And we are all responsible, and each responsible as citizens, to help make those ideals more real in the world. I tell my students at graduation every year that their job, no matter whether they become doctors, go to Wall Street, or become teachers or artists or whatever they do, their job is to be the people who see the aspirations in the founding documents and see the lived experience of their brothers and sisters on the earth, and then close the gap or work to close the gap between those high aspirations and the real lived experience. And you do that by being a generous person, not only in your work, but very much in your personal life, and deploying your time and your energy and your intelligence and expertise as a philanthropist, as a lover of your fellow human beings. And many times our jobs permit us to do that, but we need to focus on ways in which our personal lives can enable us to do philanthropic acts. And that improves our society, and it continues to refine us as generous human beings.
Okay, one thing that you mentioned a moment ago, and you also mentioned in some of the writings that you've done on this topic, is you talk about, refer to the wisdom tradition. What do you mean by the wisdom tradition? And then we want to talk about how that fits into your understanding of philanthropy.
Well, that's such a good question, Hugh. When I was teaching a course about 6 years ago, I laid out for students some of the writings on philanthropy that I thought would help them to understand philanthropy, not just in our culture, but in other cultures. And in doing that, I really surprised myself, because I found that not only in the Judeo-Christian tradition, but in the Muslim tradition and in the Buddhist tradition and in the Confucian tradition and in the Hindu tradition, in terms of the religious, the sacred traditions, religious groups called for exactly the same kind of acts that show that you love your fellow human beings. And in addition to that set of sacred texts that I put into this course, I began to look at the civic texts that finally developed into democracy, that start back in ancient Greece and Rome. And those texts talk about the importance of a relationship between and among citizens that showed care and concern and support for fellow citizens. I'm sure our listeners know that it says in our Constitution that we will provide for the common defense and provide for the common welfare. And at the end, it says we pledge each other our lives, our fortunes, and our sacred honor. Well, you know, in order to defend these principles, we've pledged in that declaration to make available our fortunes to make a strong and generous and equitable, just society. So democracy counts on that kind of relationship between and among citizens. And these religious traditions, these sacred texts, encourage this kind of generosity. And so when you step back and look at the sacred traditions of human beings over thousands of years across the whole geography of the world, the earth, and then you look at the civic traditions that have eventuated in democracy, you see a very similar call. And the call is, be generous to each other, take care of each other, watch out for each other, That's how you build a strong personal life and a strong family life and a strong community life.
I'd like to ask a question. You used language in that answer. You talked at one point, after talking about the Declaration of Independence, you talked about a concern for being equitable and for being just. Is that the same thing as being charitable? Here's the reason I ask, 'cause sometimes when I think about being just, I think about giving someone what's due them. And it's not, if I give someone what's due them, it's not that I'm being charitable or generous to them. For instance, if a student does an excellent piece of work, I want to say that they deserve an A.
Right.
I don't want to say I'm being charitable by giving them an A. How does, in your view, are justice and charity different? And if so, how do you understand the two of them and what we ought to be doing as human beings?
Well, of course, the call to justice is a call to treat all people with the same dignity. That's justice. It's fairness. It's making sure that all people are treated with equal dignity and respect and tolerance. Charity comes in when we look at the situation of the other person and we realize that something is missing. And then we realize that we have what that person needs and we can fill that gap. And so because we have committed ourselves to being people who love our fellow human beings, we step right up and fill that gap. So justice and charity are interestingly linked. Sometimes, as in the story of the Good Samaritan, the person who was injured and hit, mugged by the robbers was a, we don't know whether that person was rich or poor. It wasn't a question of charity to a poor person. It was charity to a person in need who was bleeding and injured. So the Samaritan stepped right in and provided what that person needed out of love of his fellow human being, even though he wasn't the same religion or race or any other kind of background. So the Samaritan does an act of charity to a neighbor. And then he even gives the innkeeper some money to pay for the medicine and the care when the Samaritan is off doing his work. And what the Samaritan's charity does is it creates a more just world. That man shouldn't have been mugged by the robbers, and the Samaritan made up for the lack of respect for the person's dignity by coming in with his charity and restoring that man to dignity, and in a sense repairing the injustice that had been done. And that's really the basic call that all of us are asked to hear in the sacred texts in all these religions I've mentioned, and that we're asked to hear as citizens in democracies.
Okay, and in about the last 4.5 minutes of the show, certainly one of the things I'd like to ask you about, because I know it's something that I hear from people in the community, that individuals are sometimes, they either are or say they are reluctant to be philanthropic because they say, well, how do I know it's going to do any good? Mm. How do I know that giving to Oxfam is really going to help? Am I just going to be paying large wages to someone who runs the corporation? Is the money in the end going to do any good? What would you say to someone who asks those kinds of questions, who expresses those sorts of concerns?
Well, I'd say a couple of things. There is an organization called the National Charities Information Bureau, and they can be contacted by anyone who wonders about the management of a big charity or even a small charity. And they'll be able to tell you, for instance, the percent of money that goes to the actual relieving of the problem involved and the portion of the money that goes to to management, and they are an organization that it's like the good housekeeping seal for charities. So one thing I'd say is if you have any questions, contact that organization. The Better Business Bureau also has a charities review board. So it's good, especially if you're going to give any significant amount of money to which might be more than $25, by the way, it's fine to check if you're not sure. The second thing I sometimes advocate is for people to give money close to home, where you know people who are on the board, where the money stays in your community, where you can visit the school that you're buying computers for, or you can visit the soup kitchen. You can see your funds at work, and you might even get inspired to give some of your time and expertise. But there have been an unhappy handful of scandals that have discouraged people, and yet most of us didn't get where we are in the world all by ourselves. Most of us received a hand up, an elbow, an arm under our elbows, and there are so many causes that need that kind of help that people shouldn't stand back from becoming philanthropists because they're worried about how their funds will be used. Part of the obligation of philanthropy is getting the information you need so that you can be a generous person. And in the long run, of course, what goes around comes around. We've watched, for instance, our children not only be very generous in the communities that they're a part of, but remain sort of wonderfully mindful children to us. They don't have to give us charity, but in the tender, loving ways that family members can be with each other, that experience of being philanthropic, in a sense, towards strangers, certainly affirms in young people their commitment to being mindful and generous of spirit right within their own families and to their own parents.
Okay, we're almost out of time. Could you have a quick sum up for the listener? What you'd like the listener to remember from today's discussion?
Well, I guess I'd like our listeners to remember that our country is as free and as strong as it is because the tradition of philanthropy was set down early in our history in the barn raisings that occurred on weekends in New England towns, where the whole town got together and everyone contributed their time and effort and their wood to putting up a barn for a young couple. And then they were expected, as they got their lives underway, to help other couples get their lives underway. That's a part of our great American tradition. Giving is a great part of the spiritual tradition of human beings. And there are probably few opportunities in life that are more important than opportunities to be generous and to improve the lives of others and to keep refining and improving our own characters. Philanthropy is a very important way to do that.
Okay, thank you very much for appearing on the show today.
It was wonderful to be with you, Hugh. Thank you.
And speaking today with Claire Gaudiani, President of Connecticut College, this is Hugh LaFollette for Ideas and Issues. Good day.